Item one is a closing at part of Schofield Boulevard between Waverly Street and New Market Boulevard, and an opening of part of Schofield Boulevard east of Waverly Street under file DAOC 1 of 2014. In accordance with the City of Winnipeg Charter and the Development Procedures Bylaw, this is a combined hearing, and the following item will also be heard at the same time. Item two is a subdivision rezoning at the land located at Sugar Beet Major Redevelopment Site north of Bishop Grandin, west of the Manitoba Hydro Corridor under file DASZ 3 of 2014.
Okay.
Okay. First up, the applicant. I have a number of people here. You're all speaking together, or?
A single presentation, not state, very long.
Just state your name, please.
It's Susan Russell, McGowan Russell.
Okay.
A very short presentation, just to review, reiterate some of the items that that David Marsh has already talked about with regards to how the DASZ conforms with the area master plan. Then a brief overview of the actual subdivision and rezoning. Then David will take over and he will review the PDO and how it relates to the rezoning. And then lastly, a couple, just four requested amendments to the administrative report for which David and Brad Cook from Stantec will come up and give some information and provide some information. So to start with the conceptual master plan, this is just an illustrative plan that that shows the illustrates the rezoning and what we're trying to do. The RMU area is in the yellow buildings. That was Area 1, Urban Mixed Use Area, so we're complying in that area. CMU, Commercial Mixed Use Zoning, is proposed. It's in the red for the Area 2, the Mixed Use Commercial Area. The existing M2 zoning will remain. That's the brown buildings and the large gray the gray area on the west side of Newmarket Boulevard. And that conforms with the area master plan as well. We have two zonings for park, a PR2, community parks on the north, in that area there. Enough room for either a baseball diamond or a soccer field, both fit, with some opportunity for parking areas as requested by the administration. The conceptual plan also provides and addresses the opportunity for urban design policies that are discussed in the area master plan, and this just illustrates putting into practice everything that's in that area master plan fits within the proposed plan of subdivision rezoning. This conceptual plan also addresses the traffic and transportation policies included in the area master plan, and primarily just four points. It provides vehicular connections to the site, including the existing Newmarket Boulevard right-of-way. If you could just point that out here, and the existing Newmarket Boulevard right-of-way, so everybody's aware of that, running through there. It connects to Chevrier and down to Bishop Grandin. And then also the Schofield Boulevard extension. We are relocating, right now there's an existing, if Aaron, if you can point that out, the existing Schofield Boulevard extension. It's an existing right-of-way, unimproved, but an existing right-of-way that we will be moving further north. So the existing intersection at Waverly remains as it was before, but we're moving it north to address some traffic concerns to make this a much better functioning site in terms of traffic. It's also providing an internal loop road right-of-way for access to the RMU area. It includes right-of-way and PR areas that provide potential for pedestrian and cycling network, linking the residential development to destinations inside and outside the site. In more detail, there's an opportunity for recreational paths in the park areas. I don't know if you can point those out, Aaron. There's sidewalks both sides of all streets within the development. Bike paths are included on Newmarket Boulevard, each side, and encouraging pedestrian cycling facilities on private property in two locations. With regards to the actual plan itself, next slide, Aaron. Just goes into the lots. So we've got lots 1 to 3 are the commercial mixed use. I don't know if you can point that out. Not as exciting as the last plan. And lots 4 to 8 are the residential mixed use, so those are the areas in around that loop road. The area for parks and open space are the PR1 and PR2 zones. Again, PR2 right there, and then the PR1 is the areas in through there, the primarily the trail areas. Lots 9 and 10 remain, as we said before, as M2 industrial, just really residual properties that are left over after the balance of the property is subdivided and rezoned. Now I'll turn it over to David to get into the PDO.
We'll keep this quite short. Essentially, the PDO, along with the rezoning, helps to implement the area master plan and take those policies and execute them on the ground. The PDO does prohibit single-family residential and duplex on the site, thus ensuring that we're going to have a higher level of density. So basically, the absolute lowest density type of product could be built on here would be townhouse, which would quickly get you in the 20 dwelling units per acre range. Some increases in permitted uses, taking some conditional uses and making them permitted, outdoor eating spaces in the CMU and that sort of thing. Reducing the parking requirements, allowing for a 25% reduction. And then increasing heights. RMU typically allows for 100 feet, consistent with the approach that was taken for Fort Rouge Yards and other TOD projects in the city. We're asking for some additional heights. Area 1A, which is the area closest to, on the far right, closest to the Plaza Drive station, that envisioning anywhere from 7 to up to in excess of 14-story buildings. So we're asking for a height of 220 feet. And as we move away from the station, as we're tapering down in height and intensity, Area 1B being 160 feet, and then Area 1C being a maximum of 100 feet. There also is a minimum height of 20 feet after discussions with the public service about ensuring that not to have single-story buildings in this area. Within Area 2, 2 and 2A, and 2B, asking for a maximum height of 100 feet as opposed to the 60 feet normally permitted in CMU. That will allow some flexibility when the market's there to accommodate more residential. And also, several of the interested clients are interested in doing a hotel, and those generally are in the 6 to 8 story range. In terms the other major component would be minimum and maximum front setbacks in the RMU and the CMU Area 2A. That would be a minimum front setback of 0, a maximum building setback of 15 feet, and allowing for up to 50% of that frontage to have some deviation from that in order to have amenity space, such as an outdoor patio, a plaza entry feature, things of that nature. And that would, by its definition, regulate the parking to the side and rear of the buildings, not in front of the buildings in the RMU and CMU Area 2A. And that, in essence, are the high points of the PDO. There are some minor tweaks here and there, but those are the points of note. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Brad, who's going to talk about, Susan's going first.
Minimum max front setbacks. Newport, I gather, is in 2B and 2A?
Yes.
So would not 2B, CMU, be a minimum, and then up also include if you're having the active streetscaping?
It does talk about using that active edges. The concept, when we get into 2B and Area 3, we're outside of that 10-minute walk shed from the rapid transit corridor. So there we're going to start seeing probably a movement towards more traditional commercial uses. So you might have more outlying pad sites with potentially a larger commercial format like a grocery store further to the west, and having that minimum and maximum setback west of Newmarket makes that a little more problematic.
Well, I thought the idea was to have that kind of Newport, that whole area there being very pedestrian-friendly, active. and so that'd be when you enter into the area, you'd have both sides would
yes.
be pushed up. But I'm just reading here. I'm still seeing that we don't.
I'm just going to go back to the conceptual plan here for a second. As we show here, I'd step closer, but then I'd be away from the microphone. On the east side of Newmarket Boulevard, the southeast corner, we're showing a commercial cluster, commercial mixed-use cluster, and also a bit of a, for lack of a better phrase, a neighborhood main street on the south side, the east-west link. We're bringing the buildings right up to the street to be able to have restaurants with outdoor patios and things of that nature, and internalizing the parking. We are aware that because of the size and nature of the site, there more than likely will be some demand for a mid-sized commercial format like a grocery store. And so that's why we have not applied all those setbacks in the area west of Newmarket Boulevard to allow for that to occur. Because if you had a grocery store in the back, you will need to have some sort of parking area in front of the store, or else you just won't have a grocery store. That does not mean you can't have pad sites and other buildings up to the street. It just makes it much more problematic. Plus, there's an aspect, there's only so much of that type of commercial product can come on stream at once.
So where you have your private road, for a better
yes.
word, would those be abutted? Those would be set straight up, those would not be set back, that's where you'd have more onto the street, would that
yeah,
almost be your pedestrian
would be,
corridor a bit?
That would be in that 0 to 15 foot setback area. If you remember the area master plan, there was the blue lines that showed the build two lines and active edges
yeah.
all through that area in the southeast, that was specifically drawn to be able to accommodate this type of concept. So there would be 0 to 15 foot setbacks in those areas.
So just pushing over. Okay, I understand.
Yeah.
Thank
Want you. The buildings up the street.
Thank you.
I've got a summary of the changes that I was going to give out to the councillors, if I could. I think I've got too many copies there, but... So just four changes that we are requesting. The first in the Winnipeg Public Service Recommendations, number 3, the introductory sentence, it talks about us rezoning to M2 Manufacturing District. We aren't rezoning to M2. That's existing. So I just wanted to, that's just a cleanup kind of thing. So the second, again, with the Winnipeg Public Service Recommendations, I believe we're allowed to do this. Items 5, 9, and 10, we're asking respectfully if we could for an additional year be added to all timeframes specified, and this is primarily due to the lime mud that must be removed prior to commencement of any work on the site. It's going to set this development back anywhere from 6 months to a year because we can't start removing it until all of this is done with. So we were respectfully requesting an extension of time as part of this agreement. I know it's happened before on others, and we're hoping that this council would agree that it is possible on this one as well. This committee would agree. The third one, Bishop Grandin, third one is Schedule B, Clause 12A2, Bishop Grandin westbound activity lane from Newmarket to Waverly Street. We're requesting that this clause be deleted, but I'll turn it over to Brad Cook to give all the reasons.
Good evening, councillors, member of city staff and public. One of the recommendations that came out of the Public Works review was that a continuous activity lane be constructed on Bishop Grandin westbound between the proposed right-in, right-out and Waverly Street. This length, it's approximately 900 meters from the center of the right-in, right-out to Waverly Street. The weaving distance, which was the primary reason that was provided for the Public Works recommendation, they were concerned about weaving in this area. The available weaving distance between the noses of the islands is approximately 800 meters. We took a look at both the Transportation Association of Canada and ASHTO, the American Association of State Highway Traffic Officials, design guidelines. Those are basically the Bibles of transportation design as they're used in Canada and the U.S. Based on TAC requirements, the minimum ramp spacing of 550 to 700 meters is typically what is needed to avoid weaving issues. In this case, we have 800 meters, well in excess of that. Based on the ASHTO design guidelines, we have a minimum, the minimum ramp spacing is 480 meters, a little bit less. Again, we have 800, well in excess of what ASHTO would consider the minimum to avoid weaving. So we would respectfully request that the filling in of the gap, as it were, that 230-meter section be deleted from the clauses. That 230 meters, that's measured from the end of an acceleration lane for the right turn exiting the site to the beginning of the existing right turn lane on Waverly Street. I'd be happy to answer any questions regarding this. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Don Lark.
Just one more item. Schedule B, Clause 15, pedestrian crossing to the bus rapid transit BRT station. We're just asking for an amendment to that first sentence, if it could read in, as the developer shall pay to the city in cash when required, that's all the same, 50% of the cost for an at-grade pedestrian crossing, if that could, at-grade could be added, and from the planned area to a maximum value of $125,000. And this is based on an upset maximum value for the developer contribution was if we could get 50% of the March 2014 cost estimate. There was an estimate that was verbally given to us at a meeting with city administration that the cost of that at-grade pedestrian crossing would be anywhere between $200,000 and $250,000. So 50% of that would be $125,000. Just wanted to point out some of the things that Hopewell is doing. This is just an enlargement of the plaza area, just showing that Hopewell is committed to providing additional amenities that were requested by the City of Winnipeg within the planned area to promote and facilitate access. And those include a kiss-and-ride facility. Transit asked for that, not so much for the residents of this particular community, but for people that would be driving from elsewhere to drop loved ones off and then leave. That's the kiss-and-ride facility. So Hopewell will be doing that. The entrance plaza itself and also an upgraded bus stop that David had talked about previously, all in that area. And so Hopewell is respectfully requesting that an upset maximum value of $125,000 be identified for the developer for the 50% contribution to the at-grade pedestrian crossing. Any questions at all for that one?
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you.
Okay. Do you want to?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Patrick Hamilton with Stevenson Advisors. I, too, would like to begin by thanking the administration. Having spent a good number of years as part of that administration, I know what it takes to put a plan and an area master plan like this together. And we've been at it for 1 year, and I think we've arrived in good shape. I also, as a consultant, would like to recognize Hopewell's involvement in this and the good character that they've brought to the development. It was actually the City of Winnipeg administration that encouraged us to revisit this site. It was rezoned industrially back in 2006. And because of the planned implementation of the BRT, the administration said it was time to look at this as a major redevelopment site with a large residential population. And as you've seen, we've achieved that. I would like to just emphasize a couple of things for the councillors to consider. And I'd like to go back to the start of the presentation. Our Winnipeg and the directions that are set out for major redevelopment sites such as this. And one of those four principles I think is very important. It says that the city will do all things to facilitate redevelopment, including incentives and partnerships and the removal of barriers to achieve that. We haven't asked for any incentives. We haven't asked for any partnerships. We are asking for a couple of minor removals of barriers, and that could be financial barriers. One of the things in the history of where we've been on this site in the last year is we started out with a concept of all-directional access off of Bishop Grandin, and we spent many months with our transportation advisors trying to compel the city to agree to the all-directional access. At the end of the day, we were asked to stand down on that request, and respectfully we did. But it did have implications on the site. It caused us to have to reduce the density of the commercial development considerably. And this site is a very difficult site to develop from an internal infrastructure cost, and that was just another difficulty that was presented. So I would ask you to consider in our kind of overall request here to gain approval the two issues that were brought to you, the two primary issues, and that is the developer's contribution to the widening of Bishop Grandin, which we think, frankly, is inappropriate. This is an expressway. This, we believe, should be a city at large cost. The reason we were denied the all-directional access is because the city said this was an expressway. The other issue, the crossing to the BRT station, as you've seen, Hopewell have done many things to accommodate their entry point, their arrival point to that crossing, and I think it is punitive to leave this kind of open-ended. So the compromise that we've arrived at is that Hopewell contribute 50% to the estimated cost of an at-grade crossing, and we think that's eminently fair. So in closing, I would just say a few things about this site in overall terms. This site is what I would call an orphan property. It's existed in a prior century for a prior use, not unlike some of the abattoirs and things in St. Boniface that were handed over to the city in tax sale. Fortunately, that's not the case here. Fortunately, we have a developer who's prepared to undertake an ambitious, however risky undertaking to develop this property. So I think the city should look at this from the standpoint that you are gaining an ambitious development. It's an infill development. There is no new infrastructure that the city has to accommodate. All costs related to the development will be internal services provided by the developer. It's enabling considerable use and considerable payback to the city's investment in BRT with over 1,400 residential units. And ultimately, the site will contribute, in our estimates, between $5 and $10 million worth of annual taxation to the city. So I think it's a real win for the city of Winnipeg at large. I'm happy that we've come to this juncture, and we look forward to your approvals. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
I just want to clarify. Make sure I have. To whoever, just to clarify the points that you're asking us for, I think I have four total. Is that four? Yes. The three that you gave us, plus the, it's on the back. That's why. It is on the back.
Yeah, it's on the back.
So it's a pedestrian crossing, the stacking lane.
Yeah. And then extension of time on three items. Yeah.
And the extension of time, number two, recommended 5, 9, and 10, that is just for you to get rid of the line. That's because
yes,
it can take a
exactly.
Longer
it get. Allows us an extra year to get rid of the line. Rather than coming back to you a year
good
from
extension.
Now and asking for an extension of time, we already know we're going to need it. So.
And just to clarify on that, because I know that was the other big stumbling block for this site.
It's good now.
And so part of it's going to go off to some Morris McDonald somewhere, and some will be used on site now for berms. Is that correct?
Yes.
You figured out a way to safely store the stuff away.
We absolutely have, yes. And we do have the details if you're interested.
No, it's just no, it's going to be off site, and I'm sure the province will take care of the where you guys store it. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You know, I think we've allowed you plenty of time. What's that?
They're finished.
They're finished.
So you don't finished?
Okay. Good.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you.
Andrew Marquez.
And Andrew Marquez. You're just on record.
In support, yeah.
Aaron Secretary of Total on record. Li Shengyu.
Just for information. Was there anyone else in support whose name wasn't called who would like to speak? Anybody who's registered in opposition whose name has not been called who'd like to speak? And anyone else for information? No.
Okay.
Can I ask
administration a few questions? Yeah, you guys can go. All good. Yeah. Administration and then voting plan. The administration, can I ask a few questions, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, administration. Okay.
On the request from the developer, from the proponent, do you have any problem with one? Is there any problem with one, which is a word that's changed?
Well, number one is standard language that's required because the zoning is changing from M2 to M2 PD01.
So we don't really have a say on that one. That's pro forma kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a problem with number two, which is extension on due to the lime removal remediation stuff?
We don't have any objections to that.
Thank you. Now, this one, we do have a difference of opinion on. We heard their opinion regarding the stacking lane. Can we hear from the administration on why they believe that their opinion is not accurate?
Public Works have a concern about safety, actually, because as you come off the acceleration lane, there's a shoulder, existing shoulder, and so the expectation is that people will continue going on the shoulder, which will be a safety issue. So that's why they want the lane to continue right through. It's based on a number of areas on Keniston, Archiwayton, or Keniston by IKEA. There's
that.
Exactly the same sort of issue that they have, and it's caused some. I don't know if it's accidents or near accidents.
So people just use a shoulder.
They'll have a tendency to use the shoulder because it's there. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's purely safety.
In movement 04, and this is where I'm going to ask another question. Can you first explain to me why I understand what the developer is trying to achieve here, but I still need to know why the developer isn't paying for the station, paying their portion of the station, such as it happened in other developments with our TOD? Do we have that answer here? I think we have that answer here.
Talked to Winnipeg Transit briefly, and they indicated that there's a different scenario between this station and Fort Rouge Yards station. Fort Rouge Yards was part of an economic development agreement and a sale of city land and that sort of thing. And in the case of Plaza Drive Station, the issues, the details of the BRT project and the Plaza Drive Station have not been fully worked out yet. So they haven't really got down to the level of detail about talking about the costing of stations and how the contributions or cost sharing of stations would happen at this point.
But I'd be corrected in assuming at this point, if we don't have something in here, if we lay it silent, the developer won't have to pay anything for the station. At this point, we don't have it in policy, or we don't have station policies of who pays what.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, like that. I just, if you don't mind me asking too, like I was wondering about that too, because I mean it's a significant contribution in the Fort Rouge Yards, for example, that they're making towards the station, and I thought that that was sort of the beginning of a process that with these kinds of developments, there would be, based on the number of people using it, and there was a formula that was put forward that we were going to be following, and it just seems like it's just been dropped, and I'm just trying to understand why. That is happening. It was something that was supposed to be the first one, and then other TODs along there were going to be partnerships with the stations based on the percentage of people living there that would use it. So I just wonder, was that looked at all, or in terms of the number of people, or Michael?
My recollection from Fort Rouge Yards is that the Jubilee Station was not part of the Phase 1 initially. And it was only added as a result of the Fort Rouge Yards development. So it was directly attributable to Fort Rouge Yards. Originally, only the Fort Rouge station was part of the first phase plan, and they added the second station because of Fort Rouge Yards. Whereas my understanding from talking with Transit is that the Plaza Drive station was planned all along as part of the second phase of rapid transit, sort of irrespective of this development.
Okay, that's fine. Well, no, I think we'll leave it as is. I think they should be paying for the station. Yeah, whatever. It's only be about the station. I know the more serious is about home.
Nobody in opposition?
So I'll take the amendments. I think we said with one we can't do, we'll do two.
Not
one, not
three. I think one was the one they said.
They can't. It's language.
Oh, I see.
Two they could do.
There's one for information.
Into the ATG report is I have a little concern about the length of time regarding the developer's responsibility for trees and sod. I think we have 2 years for trees, 1 year for sod, for maintenance and making sure it doesn't die. Mm-hmm. Is there any concern the fact that we will be using lime? Any more risk for us in a year and a half, 2 years, that it'll just be it? And then they'll go, your fault now. Do we need to extend that time period over?
That's a good question. I'm not an expertise in lime and trees, so I don't think I can answer that.
Yeah, there am I. Just my concern would be it's what happened in Linden Ridge, where we all of a sudden the trees, half a year late after the developer's responsibility, the trees all kind of died off. So we're not too sure on our side. Okay, no. That's fine. That one I can. I think a number of these issues we can deal with, and my question to you, a number of these issues, let's, for example, this time extension, could that be dealt with at the next phase as it goes through, as we have time to, it's not going to make or break this proposal for me. But if we want, if I got that information from, Martha, the borrowing, from the foresters, and then we could meet at, I guess, PP&D and add it there, if need be? Is that
the extension?
Yeah, on the servicing agreement.
Yeah.
We can do those modifications of the servicing agreement at that point.
Yeah.
I don't want to make things on the fly, so I just raise them as a concern.
You mean for the trees? Okay.
For the, if we need to extend the sod, the maintenance cycle. Like,
yeah, we'd bring it up at PP&D.
Yeah. Motions at this point.
Okay, John?
Yeah. No, I'm not going to make those motions at this point, so. Okay, so let me get there.
I can go up back up to the gallery if they want.
You can go back to the gallery if you like. I'm going to start going. Or can they come back, though? No, because no one spoke in opposition.
Well, there's nothing to rebut. I mean, yeah, nothing to rebut. If they want to rebut to maybe the comments.
Yeah, I guess there is. There are comments. I guess there is that opportunity. I want to be, Mr. Marsh or anybody, we are going to, there really was an opposition here, but I think some of my comments were in opposition to some of your positions, so we're going to allow you the opportunity to come back to rebut to whatever you heard up here or clarify.
Thanks. The public hearing had not been closed. That's why we had approached the podium to try to respond. Perhaps if Susan could address the limelight issue, it would be pertinent to actually ask the landscape architect who's present about that issue.
That's why I ran down the stairs. With regards to the lime mud, we are removing all of the lime mud, right? And we are placing it into berms, a berm along what we're proposing is to place a berm along Bishop Grandin. We're putting a full half meter of topsoil in there. We've had all of the experts look at it, full half meter of topsoil, and then where there's trees, there'll be a full meter of topsoil. And that's more than adequate in terms of, and the lime mud, there's no issues of the leaching or those kinds of things. It's perfectly fine. It's actually probably better than a lot of the situations where developers just dig them and put them right into the clay. So it's a much better situation for the trees, I'm told, and for the native grasses that we're planning on putting in there as well. Okay. You're welcome.
Thank you, councillors. I'll be very brief. Just regarding the safety issues that Greg had raised, we were initially told that this is regarding the continuous activity lane again on Bishop Grandin. We're initially told that it was necessary due to potential weaving issues, which I think we've shown and we've passed on to the city, the weaving requirements, so that doesn't appear to be the reasoning for this activity lane. Regarding the safety issues that are encountered, they are primarily a result of the very high right turn volume, the westbound to northbound right turn that is out there today. Anybody who drives through that intersection knows that that particular movement is very high. In the mornings, it's about 850 vehicles making that right turn during the peak hour. In the afternoon, it's over 600-ish vehicles making that turn. Just to put things in perspective, normally when a right turn movement has 500 to 600 vehicles on it, that's when you consider constructing a dual right turn and operating it under traffic, under signal control with overlaps from the opposite lefts. That has not been done in this case. The result is you get a very long right turn queue, and at the same time you get a very long through queue, westbound through queue on Bishop Grandin, and that through queue actually blocks entry to the right turn lane. So what people are doing, and this is currently, are jumping onto the shoulder and bypassing the through queue to join the right turn lane. Once Bishop Grandin crossing is in place, we are not adding any traffic, zero traffic, to that westbound right turn movement. So it appears to us that, yes, potentially there is a safety issue, but it exists today with pre-development volumes, and we're not exacerbating the situation with any traffic that our site's putting onto the roadway network. So I don't disagree. There is potentially an issue with right turn queues being blocked at this location, but it's just we're not really adding to the problem. It's a pre-existing problem. So we'd respectfully ask that requirement to extend the activity lane be removed. Thank you.
Good evening. I'll be very brief again for the record. David Marsh, Dillon Consulting. Just wanted to address the points in regards that were raised onto the cost of the station and who pays for what. Dillon has had the privilege of being involved in studies and design and construction of the Rapid Transit Corridor dating back to, I believe, the 70s is when the first studies were done. And also had the privilege of working on the current stage too. At no time through that process was it envisioned that stations that were deemed to be operationally necessary for the operation of the transit corridor were to be paid for by surrounding property owners. Our understanding is the same as what the public service has stated, that in the case of Fort Rouge Yards, there was one station to be put in for operational purposes. It was felt as part of that development planning process that it was appropriate to have a second station if the developer was willing to pay for a portion, if not all of it. So that is our understanding. It's the same as the public service in regards to that. Certainly, rapid transit is not cheap. Stations do cost money. But it is important to note that when we look at what the city's planning documents say, and also in addition to best practices for using rapid transit as city building, is that the public sector invests in the rapid transit corridor and the private sector comes along to do the development, and that the cost of those rapid transit investments are best recouped through some value capture means, whether it's increased capturing the increased property taxes due to development, in other words, in other matters. Yes, the developer of Fort Rouge Yards was required to pay for a portion of one station. However, that developer benefited from other city contributions, including a loan guarantee, participation by the city with a joint application to FCM Green Municipal Fund, and land drainage sewer upgrades that were done as part of the first phase in order to leverage development on that site. Those costs for the land drainage were recouped. However, Hopewell is not asking for any city contributions at all. We're essentially going, we're going to pay our fair share, we're going to pay the cost of development. But I think it's important to note that the Jubilee Station was somewhat of a unique case, and that's not the case here. Plaza Drive stations have been envisioned for 20, 30 years.
Good.
I know Barry's looking at it, actually. mentioned the planning today, but I'm here actually in policy.
Yes, I'm all set to go. Councillor Smith, let me just get to my, where is it here? So many files open. Okay. Do I do them together? Is that the plan, or?
No, you'll vote on each one separately, right?
So number one?
You'll close it? Number one first, yeah. Closing.
Okay, that the reports of the public service be taken as read.
All in favor, opposed, carried.
We see the public recommendation be concluded.
All in favor, opposed, carried.
Recommendation of the public service be concurred in, and for it is standing policy committee, PB&D.
Aye.
The public hearing respect to the application be concluded.
All in favor, opposed, carried.
Yep. Please note the committee has made a recommendation on this matter that will now proceed to council. No further representations are permitted, and all persons registered for the public hearing will receive notice when the matter is considered by council. So item two.
Item two. That the report of the public service be taken as read. That receipt of public representation be concluded.